Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Nazim Rashid. Nazim is the author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, a how-to manual for all those wanting permanent change in their lives. It is also a guide to virtually go back in time and eliminate all negative feelings associated with your past experiences that have caused any level of difficulty in your present life. Nazim has helped clients move from apathy to productivity, from codependency to loving themselves without attachment, from drug-addicted lifestyles to clean and sober positive examples, demonstrating what can be accomplished when one connects and stays connected to that which gives life. I am Dorothy Rashid, the co-host. Without any further ado, I bring to you Nazim Rashid.
Well, all right. Thank you very much, my wonderful Dorothy, for that great introduction. Well, it is another day in paradise. Yes, it is. Another reason to have a vacation. Here in the Phoenix, Arizona area in the good old USA. And I always say that for our out-of-the-country fans. We have South Africa, Malaysia, Indonesia, Bangkok, Germany. And now we have Singapore as our latest hit from outside of the country. So, if any of you are listening right now, welcome again to the Reconnected Show. So welcome again. Welcome all into our Paradise One studio where every day is a holiday and the party never stops. Yay! Okay, all right. Yes. Welcome again to the Reconnected Show, which is based on the chapters in my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. We always start with a wonderful universal opening prayer. And like I mentioned before on this program, whatever name or reference fits your belief system will do just fine when I am mentioning God. Just know that we did not create ourselves, and in knowing this reality, we can give attention and honor the source of our creation for guidance and direction. I am using God as an universal theme and is not relegated to any particular religion or belief system. With the name of God, we thank you for the angels you have sent amongst us, reminding us of your presence, grace, and mercy. Thank you for the attitudes of gratitude you have given us to give back to you. Thank you for the favor of a clear thinking mind you have given us. Thank you for our positive associations that help us keep connected to our higher purpose. Amen. Now for our show notes, we have Dorothy. Take it away.
We all have experienced disappointments in our past, and some of us have not reconciled those issues. In order for us to travel wonderfully on our healthy path of life, we have to release all unnecessary baggage that is preventing us from going full speed ahead. This is what Nazim's book, Reconnected, and this program is designed to do. Let us hear from you as we learn together how discovering the needs of our child self can make a substantial difference in our lives. The long-awaited book Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, is available now at www.cloudsofabundance.com, amazon.com, Healthy Habits Food Store in Phoenix, Jazzy Yoga Shop in Scottsdale, Arizona. The chapters in the book and the themes of this Reconnected show are forgiveness, validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, codependency and addiction, recovery issues, identifying and managing emotions. You can connect with Nazim using his email address in our book club at Cox.net. That's N as in Nazim, R as in Rashid, book club at Cox.net, or his website, www.cloudsofabundance.com. You'll find information such as life coaching, book signing dates, webinars, and workshops. All life coaching is done through your phone, so you can have sessions with Nazim wherever you may be in the world. Life coaching is about removing the obstacles and encouraging you to go beyond your perceived barriers to the accomplishment of your dreams and aspirations. Life coaching is about results now and creating the future that you want versus counseling that spends a lot of time in healing the past. Healing the past is also important and something Nazim does with his book and book-related events. It's time to be reconnected and time for the new you. Nazim?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Time for the new you. The new you. Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, I'm sure that once you really think about that, it is time. You've had the old you all your life with all your emotional baggage from the past, and reasons that you say are keeping you from accomplishing your goals. Mm-hmm. So whether it's addictions, whether it's just carrying some old, unnecessary baggage with you, it's part of the old you. And when you think about the new you, you're thinking in your dreams and daydreaming and kind of saying, well, I'd like to have that, but yeah, it's not for me. I got too much on me. I can't handle it. I just can't do it. That's the old you thinking. It's time for the new you. You can do it. All right. That's what this show is all about. Yeah, and this is the Reconnected Show. This is a personal growth program designed with your inner peace in mind. The discussion will be based on the chapters in my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. This book contains a methodology for feeling the many emotional voids experienced in childhood. Reconnected is for those adults who want to create real internal changes in their lives by addressing significant emotional events in their past which are affecting them presently. It is also for parents who want vital information in raising their genius young souls, mentors who can appreciate additional tools for those who are following them, their mentees, and teachers who would cherish more methods for shaping, motivating, and inspiring our students, reflecting the greatness that they already possess within. Couples wanting a better relationship can also benefit from the personal growth tools being offered. As for any individual who wants to consciously connect to their higher self, to spirit, source, energy, to God. You see, it's really a multi-purpose manual, 412 pages and 14 chapters. Mm-hmm. A parent's manual, we always emphasize, a lot in the book, as to increasing the emotional literacy in our children so they can articulate how they're really feeling. That's very important. Also, we talk about deep breathing exercises and helping our kids to de-stress and relax and center themselves. A teacher's manual. We want teachers to connect empathically with the students more so. That would enhance the whole teaching process. Recovery manual. We have over 100 pages and just for drug recovery, which also includes codependency in there, and called the 12 principles of recovery. A mentor's manual. Absolutely. We talked about that before. A relationship manual. We need to increase the longevity of our marriages out here. Mm-hmm. That's very, very important. Last week, we had on our happy news a couple who had been married 83 years. Okay? She's 100 years old. He's 102. 83 years. We want to have more of those kind of stories. This book, Reconnected, can help in those areas. As a manual for the transformation of your negative experiences to positive memories, loving yourself at deep levels, and creating the life you have always desired. Yes, very, very good. So Dorothy told you how you can get the book. And soon we'll have, actually, you can start putting in a new email address, the nrbookclub@gmail.com, nrbookclub@gmail.com. We'll be making a switch here next week, so you can keep that in mind. Okay? Now, we always have a happy news segment, and as you regulars know, we always want to promote that which is going on great in the world. A lot of happy news going on out here. Mm-hmm. So in that in mind, at our international and national news desk, we have Dorothy again. Take it away.
Today's article is from today.com, and it's written by Jillian Ajunowitz. And the title is, At 93, World's Oldest Yoga Teacher is Still Going Strong. Cal Quarchon Lynch considers her hundreds of yoga students to be her own children. The 93-year-old has been practicing yoga since she was 8 years old and just named the world's oldest yoga teacher by Guinness World Records. Based in New York, Quarchon Lynch has taught hundreds of students around the globe for over 45 years and has followers in India, France, and the U.S. Accolades aren't anything new for the famous yogi. Born in a French colony in India, she once won a contest for the best legs in Europe, working as a cabaret dancer in London during World War II. Her win led her to a modeling career in Paris and then acting roles in America, followed by a career in script writing and documentary. It wasn't until the age of 73 that Quarchon Lynch decided to concentrate on teaching yoga. Founding the Westchester Institute of Yoga in New York. According to her website, Cal is a living advertisement for how to tap into our human potential. She is unique in her ability to overcome the effects of aging, to control her body and mind in harmony with yoga's principles. Quarchon Lynch teaches yoga 4 days a week and also keeps busy ballroom dancing and guiding wine tours in New York State. And she certainly knows how to overcome a challenge. At 87, she had hip surgery, but a month later, she took to the dance floor, starting lessons. I believe that we can always reach just a little bit further, said Quarchon Lynch. I'm inspired to bring yoga into others' lives, along with helping people unearth new talents. The previous record holder for oldest yoga teacher was Bernice Bates, 91, of Florida, who was given the title last year. And I don't know if any of you remember, but we read about her a few months back, or maybe we read about her last year, Bernice Bates. So now we have a new one. She's 93 years old, the oldest yoga teacher. That's beautiful.
Wow. Well, and there's something. 93 years old, and I believe when you Google her or you go to YouTube and put her name in there. Matter of fact, Dorothy, can you spell the name out so people can write that down and they can research the YouTube video?
Oh, sure. Her name is Cal, T as in Tom, A as in Apple, O like Opera. And then it's Quarchon, P like Papa, O is an opera, R, T like Charlie, H like Harry, O is an opera, N, dash, Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H, Cal Quarchon Lynch.
Wow, okay, there you go. You actually will see her.
Go ahead.
And she actually will, with her hands, she'll actually hold her whole body up in a lotus position where legs kind of folded. She'll actually hold her whole body up there. And she has a couple of positions like that when she can do it. And she dances. She swing dances, salsa, and does a lot of things. So you can see a lot of amazing videos on this woman, 93 years old, yoga teacher. Yeah, so that's pretty phenomenal there, pretty phenomenal. All right, today's theme, resolution and emotional life. You know, we're trying to take the area of emotional health in our childhood from different perspectives. And we're going to look at another idea, looking at how conflicts in the home affect the child. There's a situation where you have children who receive who witness conflict with no resolution, how that affects them in childhood and adulthood. Children who actually see no conflict at all, and how that affects them in childhood and adulthood. So we're going to talk about that. First of all, I'll recap last week on the last live show we had, the last live one, which is a couple weeks ago. Last week was a pre-broadcast. We had Dr. Buffy Wooten with us as she discussed having emotional health. She was saying that some of us are afraid of our emotions, and that when anger or betrayal emotions, for example, are in our history, we set up detour signs within so we don't deal with those unhealthy emotions. Our emotions are our defense mechanisms and are there to protect us, warn us, and prepare us for upcoming situations. If we can be a little more sensitive to our emotions, we can realize subtle signs they are telling us. They also help us to plan better. If we are afraid of our emotions or deny them, we will miss all those cues that are intended to warn us. If you deny these emotions, you are less prepared to adequately address them. Okay, now to hear the whole show, simply go to our website, www.blogtalkradio.com/reconnected, and click on Having Emotional Health with Dr. Buffy Wooten. You can listen and download the show all without charge, all free therapy here. Wonderful. Now today we have returning friend of the show, endorser of Reconnected, author and psychologist Dr. E. Douglas Brown, with us as he will address our theme of resolution in emotional life. He says, quote, "It is just as important to clean up after a storm as it is to learn how to endure a storm," end quote. Imagine what a neighborhood looks like after a storm if no one cleans up. Storm after storm, debris and wreckage just pile up. This scenario is likened to what happens when a child never or rarely sees individuals in arguments and conflicts reconcile with each other. Mm-hmm. There is no closure, no return to a sense that the world is both safe and caring. The child, now an adult, experiences repeated disagreements and disappointments and is shackled to the view that his or her cynical negative feelings are just being realistic about life. Okay, we've got a lot to talk about today. We're already playing a part two already. So without any further ado, we'll bring Dr. E. Douglas Brown on. Dr. Brown, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Azeem. How are you this morning?
Oh, fantastic and wonderful. I'm doing great and doing so much better knowing that you are connected with us. I'm glad. Thank you for reconnecting.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. I'm glad I got in.
Absolutely, absolutely. So tell us, now before we go into our topic here, even though you've been on the show a few times before, there might be one or two people out there somewhere that really don't know about Dr. E. Douglas Brown. So and for a little bit, can you talk about your background and what you're currently doing?
Yeah, I since finishing school, I was associate professor of psychology in New York, the chairman of the African American Studies Department. I was associate professor of psychology. My areas are clinical personality anxiety disorders and personality disorders. And I've been practicing going on now for about 30 years. I've dealt with a variety of people from many kinds of backgrounds who have many difficulties and problems. And what we're going to talk about today is more or less the fruit or one of the conclusions that I've come to both in reading, both in my research and working with people for many years. I'm currently the clinical director of the Ebony House Incorporated in Phoenix, Arizona. Ebony House includes substance abuse programs. We have a comprehensive children's program, and we also have some transitional programs for individuals who suffer from serious mental illness.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Well, it's best for me to stop there.
Okay, all right. I know you could probably go on forever even about that, but we'll put a little pause there. And let's get right into it. And now, there are a lot of issues here with our kids and what they're witnessing in the homes. And a lot of parents don't realize that what they're doing and saying and how the house is structured can affect a child for life. And so let's talk about it a little bit. So let's kind of get into it and see how it kind of develops here. So talk about the being prepared, enduring the storm and cleaning up after the storm, and kind of bring that analogy back home with us.
Okay. Well, we know that arguments and conflicts are more or less inevitable in life. I dare say there's not a single household on this planet, a family that has not had disagreements. So as a function of enduring the storm simply means my learning that life is not a bed of roses. It's certainly a lot of roses in these beds, but there are a few pricks too as well. There's some pricks and some are sharper than others. Because most households include disagreements and there are arguments and there even may be fights, what is as much important as enduring these storms is cleaning up the debris. I dare say that many times if a young person does not see conflicting parties reconcile, if they don't learn how to reconcile with their siblings, if they do not witness, if they do not observe their parents reconciling, appreciating one another, respecting one another, this is going to amplify or increase the toxic effect of the negative emotions that they experience, the fear, the anxiety, and the depression. This is what I mean by cleaning up after the storm. There will be some storms, but there must also be the cleanup. There must also be the resolution. Because resolution really means to solve something,
mm-hmm.
to solve a problem, something that needs fixing. So resolution is very important. And you know what else, Nazim?
Mm-hmm.
Resolution is part of reconnection.
Ah.
You see, resolution, learning the meaning of resolution and learning its effect on my emotional life plays a very important part in my reconnection with my true self and the purpose of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Please go on. Please go on, please.
All right. Okay. You see, if a young person or a child repeatedly observes and sees his or her family members in arguments and conflicts, in the absence of any overt behavior, any kind of overt gestures of warmth toward one another, or a phrase that seems to be quite, maybe I won't say rare, but maybe we don't hear it as frequently nowadays in our relationships. And it's actually, say, about three words. It's a contraction. And I'll tell you what it is. I'm sorry.
Oh.
My fault.
Mm.
That's more than three words, though. Correct, right. Or our phrase is like, let's put that behind us. You know, we love one another so much. Let's get back to our relationship. In other words, the relationship is more important than any temporary disagreements. One of the major problems, I think, at least in today, in many contemporary situations, is that individuals have what I call titanic egos.
Mm.
And because individuals have titanic egos, they are unrealistic regarding their own self-perceptions. They tend to believe that maybe I'm always right and others are always wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to bump into a lot of arguments and more serious confrontations, even with people that are close to them. See, imagine, as I said in the metaphor that I used, repeated storms, repeated types of natural disasters, and there's no cleanup. You see, the fact that there's no cleanup is a disaster in itself.
Yes, yes.
Now, research clearly shows that the brain memorizes emotions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the leading areas of study today in psychology and neurology is called emotional memory, that the more important events in our lives, our brain tends to store those memories associated with the events and situations that we may go through. Now, obviously, if the brain, so to speak, memorizes emotions, it must also memorize resolutions.
Okay.
So, let's say an individual recalls an event earlier on in their life. They may even, let's say, even see their parents arguing, right? This is not unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're talking about human beings.
Right.
But also, in that visualization, the very critical word you use in Reconnect, in that revisualization, they also see resolution. They see their parents coming together, and that's a lesson.
Okay.
That's a teaching situation.
Mm-hmm.
What are, like, for example, man, I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
And that is, would we not agree that negative feelings and emotions are a problem?
Yes.
Are there any kinds of feelings and emotions that help to solve those problems?
Sure.
Can you name a few, just intuitively? You know, this is not a test.
Well, love.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Compassion. Empathy.
You talk about them in Reconnected.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you're talking about in Reconnected.
Yes.
These emotions are critical for resolution of emotional life.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about that. Now, if now when you know, as you know, kids have different stages to go through behaviorally. Well, you have a 5-year-old that witnesses conflict, and you have a 10-year-old that witnesses the same conflict. They will perceive it a little differently, I believe.
Yes, of course they will, because Piaget, I'm sure many of your audience are familiar with Piaget's work.
Yes, yes.
He developed a theory of mental development in children, the stages of cognitive development.
Mm-hmm.
And very young children are not capable of processing information in the same way older children or adults are. Have you noticed that in real, literal, natural disasters, have you noticed, for example, the earthquake in Haiti and probably, you know, the tsunami in Japan? Very young children still continue to play jump rope. They continue to laugh and play in the playgrounds. I'm sure you've noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Your audience has noticed that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means that our brains and nervous systems are configured in a manner so that small children, young children, do not have to experience the traumas, the kinds of psychological and emotional trauma that these disasters often bring. They are protected. They are inoculated from having those kinds of feelings and those reactions. But as we grow older, see, when we grow older, we don't forget those events.
Uh-huh.
We remember the event, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, if I recall the event in the absence of resolution, that does not, in fact, produce healing. It does not lead to healing. It does not lead to recovery.
Mm.
It does not lead to happiness. Happiness is a quality of the inner self. Resolution is essential to access happiness and to gain happiness in life. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
It's common sense. Where there are problems, where there are conflicts, where things don't appear to be in balance,
mm-hmm.
you know, we look for solutions. We look for ways to mend, and correct situations and relationships in life. This is what nations do. You know, nations go to war. They have conflicts. There's a victor or victors. We would hope in most situations neither party is vanquished, that this is a just conflict. And after
right.
the conflict, they sign an armistice. Or, you know, the war is over. That constitutes international resolution. Would you not agree?
Yeah, sure, of course. Mm-hmm. But tell me now, what happens when the child, say for instance, a 10-year-old, experiences this conflict? Now remember, and it's called Bill. Okay,
Bill.
Bill at 5 years old witnessed a conflict between his parents, and there was no resolution. They said, "Oh, no big deal." They kept on playing with their toys. But now, 10 years old, now 5 years later, the same kind of conflict is there. No resolution. How is 10-year-old Billy going to deal with it? How's it going to affect his current life?
Well, in many cases, Billy is probably going to become a somewhat belligerent, aggressive child. That, in other words, when people disagree with Billy, Billy is probably going to be more apt to get into fights, you know, to be somewhat oppositional in structured situations, wanting to have his way, because Billy hasn't been exposed to situations where he's seen someone wanting to have his or her way, but in the end realizing that it's not my way all the time. So he doesn't see, he doesn't learn that it's not about him every time. He doesn't recognize that resolution is very important for his own emotional health, for his psychological well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, by the time Billy is 20 or 30, if Billy continues to experience significant conflicts, disappointments, and what have you in relationships, well, we're looking at a possible, what is called an antisocial personality. Now, obviously, anti means against and away
mm-hmm.
from,
mm-hmm.
not a part of. And social means inner relationships,
mm-hmm.
in these interactions with others around you. And so Billy becomes antisocial because Billy does not know how to resolve conflicts. Billy doesn't really understand how to call up the love, the compassion, the empathy. Billy, in a way of speaking, not literal, it seems impossible for Billy to say, "I'm sorry, I regret what I did. Let's get back together. Let's look at this another way." You follow what I'm saying?
Sure.
Billy hasn't had those experiences.
Mm-hmm. And as you know, at 10 years old, that's the age where kids are, their priority is conforming and being okay with the group, you know, and the group norms or standards, even group self-esteem is more important than anything else. And so if this kid, Billy, hasn't learned appropriate social skills, but part of him wants to belong, what happens to him internally?
Billy soon becomes depressed. He becomes very bitter about life. Billy may even entertain the feeling that he is worthless. Very low self-esteem. But Billy also wants to protect what integrity, whatever the integrity he has, he wants to protect it. And Billy tends to become very cautious or vigilant, very sensitive. Billy tends to be somewhat compulsive or over-vigilant about, he's worried about whether people are talking about him, whether people want to hurt him. He's always questioning motives. Someone may say, and they may genuinely tell Billy that they like him. Well, because Billy has seen people that have said that to each other, Billy has grown up and he has seen people say to one another, I love you and I like you. And Billy has also seen those conflicts and those fights and those disagreements and the absence of resolution. So when Billy is 21 or 34 and he meets a young lady who says, I love you, Billy, or I like you, Billy is possibly not really capable of responding to her. He can't, so to speak, read the signals. He will immediately put up his guard, not in front of her. He won't reject her outright, but he's going to be suspect of her. He's going to wonder, what does she mean? When she says she likes me, does she really like me, or is there another alternative motive here? Because he's never seen resolution. He hasn't had sufficient experience in his life where he's seen people just being normal, just being with their limitations, just experiencing conflicts, which we all do. But greater than and more important than the conflicts, what is the resolution?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're going to be strong winds. There's going to be strong winds. They're lightning. Sometimes I may have to go in my basement or my shelter. And I come out and I see all of the wood everywhere and the debris. So I've got to kind of shake off that immediate fear I have and get to work. I've got to feel calm. I've got to go back to that feeling of calm and serenity. You know, I've endured the storm. Thank God, thank the higher power. I've managed to endure this storm. All right, now be about cleaning up.
Mm-hmm.
Follow that?
Oh, yes. Huh? Now let's go into Billy's adolescence. Now, here you have a blend of, as we all know in the field, you got hormonal changes, you have different kinds of peer pressure going on, and a lot of inner conflicts in a normal adolescent going on, because that's just the stage of development of adolescence. You see, so what happened to Billy going through all this, plus what he's dealing with that didn't get resolved in his childhood?
Well, as we approach puberty and adolescence, we're talking about another social world. It's not that little playground anymore, and the Tonka toys or the Legos or what have you. Not pun against them, but it's a different world. There are hormonal changes, as you say. The social world broadens. Billy has to accommodate more people. He has to accommodate people with different views and perspective of life than himself. And Billy, as you said, Billy has to fit in. He has this urge to fit in. He wants to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
But Billy is going to struggle with being normal, because normal to Billy means as Billy defines normal.
Oh.
state. Now, as Billy defines normality in his emotional universe, that emotional universe is full of or ridden with conflict. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when Billy tries to enter a relationship, or he wants to enter, say he wants to be a part of a social club, or there's some friends or what have you, peers he wants to associate with, Billy is likely to insist that he controls the situation. Because as long as Billy feels he's in control, he feels safe.
Oh, so you might want to be like a little gang leader of instead of a follower of a gang.
Right. More likely the gang leader or the leader's cohort.
Okay.
Or the one that stands out and says, I'm with the leader. See, Billy wants to be in relationships and situations where Billy feels that he has control, that he's not going to allow a situation to emerge where he may get hurt, not necessarily strictly physically, but emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Billy is not going to let you hurt him emotionally. He's going to hurt you first emotionally. He's going to probably berate you. He's going to talk about you. You know, if you didn't make the basketball team and he did, he's going to tell you you're just weak, a chump. You see what I'm saying? Is the radar clear in terms of what I'm saying in this regard? What does resolution for Billy? Okay, this is what I'm saying. What does resolution mean for Billy? Now, given the fact that Billy has not had sufficient experiences where he's seen this type of reconciliation, he's seen this kind of resolution, what does that mean? What does resolution mean for Billy?
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like asking you.
Oh.
Well,
he's never experienced it, so therefore, it's like an empty void, and for him,
yes, is
whatever he feels is right, and it might be, you know. So say for instance, if someone is disagreeing with him, his resolution is to control and totally dominate the person.
You know, when I was scanning and looking over, Reconnected, I saw that theme many, many times. That theme many, many times. You see, the ghost, you talked about, like you mentioned this in the beginning of the show. You see the ghost that people carry, the baggage that they carry.
Oh, yeah.
You see, trying to exit or move away from that child that was abused, or that child who was punctured in some way, injured some way emotionally. How to get beyond that child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, you explained that very well in Reconnected, and I'm being authentic, I'm being genuine in saying this. I'm not trying to just say it to say it. Resolution does not have to occur immediately after the conflict or the situation. In fact, it rarely does. It rarely does because people are too emotionally wound up.
Right.
They're too wound up. The journey toward resolution usually occurs depending on the nature of the situation when somebody else intervenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have people called marriage counselors.
Right, and mediators.
That's why we have mediators. But I have my own. You see, I can formulate and fashion an intermediator.
Right.
That intermediator, when I'm involved in conflicts and disagreements and arguments. See, what that intermediator will do, if, in terms of my growth, an intermediator will immediately say or suggest to me, this is not the proper way to handle the situation.
Right.
Oh, I don't want to continue feeling this way, so I'm not going to feed this situation. So I'm going to remove myself from it, not necessarily physically, but I'm going to, what? I'm going to attempt to resolve this. I'm going to attempt to find some solution. Let's not continue down this road. That's an intermediary. Mediator.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, we all know it's, we joke about marriages all the time. Well, you know what I mean. We're all humans. And people universally talk about the disagreements they have with their spouses. But you know something? In long-lasting marriages, spouses learn how to resolve their conflicts and disagreements. Because there's something greater. There's something greater that motivates them. And that is their union, their desire for union for one another. Love. Love, compassion.
Now, if you can, let's talk about Billy's adolescence, because I want to take this very slowly for people who might have adolescents right now and wonder why their own Billy is attracting the wrong kind of friends, okay? Let's talk about the friends he does have, the ones who are in his association, boys and girls, and let's talk about what kind will be actually present there.
Well, of course, we can't, obviously it depends on the specific situation. However, if Billy or Barbara are mainly associated with peers, for example, who engage in negative behavior, and a lot of negative behavior. And so, you know, I'm a little hesitant to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. If Billy or Barbara appear, they're always engaging in substance abuse or, you know, infractions of sorts. This kind of behavior actually suggests depression and anger. You know, young people and adolescents who get a kick out of doing these kinds of things, they want to get back at somebody. And if they meet other peers like themselves who want to get back in some fashion or another, then they're going to join hands. They're going to be in league with one another. And they will be mutually reinforcing each other. Young people who are more stable, what I mean, they're more emotionally rooted. You see, their emotional life not only has, you know, elements that are discomforting, but their emotional life also have elements that are very invigorating, that are positive, that are empathetic, that, you know, love and respect. Young people like this, adolescents like that, don't routinely get involved in delinquent behavior. You know, if I may use that, because that's what we're basically talking about, delinquent behavior.
Right.
So,
right.
Why would a young person, why would an adolescent knowingly get involved in delinquent behavior when a parent, guardian, what have you, has repeatedly told them, no, it's not good for you, you shouldn't do it? Well, let's say that because the parents' answers simply are not effective. They don't work. These answers are not sufficient. Why aren't the answers sufficient? Why is it that when mom or dad or my uncle or my aunt or my guardian tries to tell me repeatedly that I'm harming myself, this isn't good for me, why do I continually do it or engage in the behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is not very complicated algebra or what have you. I do it because I don't think what my mom and dad and the guardian, whatever, works. I don't think that's going to lead me to the resolution that I'm looking for. It's not going to lead to the kind of resolution that I'm looking for, the restoration or restoring of my sense that my world, you know, my world is okay. I live in an okay world. I live in a world where people accept me for who I am, They give me an opportunity to express myself, and that's the world I want to be in. But that hasn't been the world that I have lived in the past. Most young people who are, let's say, they're constantly involved in delinquent behavior. Everybody, mm-hmm. you know, when you're young, you're getting, but they're constantly involved in delinquent behavior. They're involved in this behavior because the behavior that they have been told works, they haven't seen it work. See? And what's the first laboratory to see if it works or not? What's that initial laboratory to see if these, call them pro-social?
Mm-hmm.
What's the first laboratory that a child is in, a place in, to learn how to express pro-social behavior?
Yeah, the home.
Exactly. 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 You know, as I said in the beginning of the show, and I shared with you and your audience, you know, I am the director of a comprehensive children's behavioral health program.
Mm-hmm.
And I've literally seen hundreds of children brought to the program for diagnoses for a wide variety of problems and situations. And there is a diagnosis that I repeatedly give. I read the reports, and it's a diagnosis that I've gotten to the point where about 98% of the diagnosis, people coming in, I give them this diagnosis. And I'm going to tell you what it is. I'll give you what it is and tell you what it means.
Okay.
Let me know what it is. It's called D6120. Okay? D6120. That means parent-child problem. Parent-child problem.
Mm-hmm.
It means the absence of resolution.
Oh.
The absence of resolution. The problem remains.
Mm-hmm. And with this, now looking at the first girlfriend that Billy has, the first boyfriend Barbara may have, what kind of, you know, love interest would they really attract with this kind of situation?
Well, let's say that Billy or Barbara tend to be notorious, if I can use this word.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be mean or trying to be just negative. Let's say they tend to be notorious. You know, they tend to engage in antisocial behavior. They're individuals that are attracted to people that live on the fringe, so to speak. Right? People who engage in high-risk behavior, or they tend to violate rules that everybody else, you know, follows.
Mm-hmm.
Their adrenaline, so to speak, goes up. So, as most of us know anecdotally, they say water seeks its own level.
Yes.
Water seeks its own level. And people who share the same kinds of behaviors and thoughts are attracted to one another. Games. What is it that young people are looking for, many of them, when they join games? They're looking for bonding.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for positive esteem. They're looking for recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I.e. gang signs. I.e. tattoos.
Mm.
I.e. the street corner.
Multiple piercings.
Yes. 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 See, resolution, emotional resolution, okay? Relationship resolution and emotional resolution is the groundwork for what? It's the ground for growth and renewal. at each stage in life, there's a different kind of resolution. So I can't just jump from stage to stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm 5 or 6 years old, let's say I'm not 5 or 6 years old, okay? Let's even make it a little more simpler than that and use a little example that some people may find humorous. Let's say that I'm one, or I'm 10 months old, or I'm 9 months old, right? And I start crying. I start yelling or crying. Now, what is it that probably will at least possibly motivate me to stop crying and yelling?
Yeah, that food we want.
Or that pacifier.
Yes, or the hug.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I'm 15 now. I'm 15. You're not going to try to put a pacifier in my mouth now.
Yes, yes.
But, see, what's resolution for me is when I'm 1 or 9 months, takes a different form and it's in a different universe than when I'm 15.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, see, now, Jose, now, with this, with Billy's girlfriend here, what qualities does she have to be okay with him? Others, what does he like about her? Maybe she might feed his ego, or what do you think about that?
Well, in addition to probably flattering him and feeding his ego, he's able to control her.
Okay.
He's able to control her. Another thing about this girlfriend that you're talking about, she never says anything negative about him.
Okay.
He may think that he's manipulating her, but I've seen enough. I've been around too many times. She, in fact, may be manipulating him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If she's clever like that.
Yeah, clever and manipulative. She's certainly not going to say anything to him. She's not going to necessarily disagree with him. If she does, she knows how to do it. And this can work both ways, you know, with Billy or Barbara. You know, we
mm-hmm.
don't, you and I, you know, none about no one in the audience. We don't have to complicate it. It's nothing complicated in the sense that if there is a storm and there are windows blown out, that means that I've got to go out and get some glass. I've got to get some more frames.
Mm-hmm.
As simple as it's that. That's, if we put it in a metaphor, it's like that. If I don't feel that you love me, let's say that you don't really show me, if you were my parent, that you're not really showing me that you love me. You do it. Let me explain to you what I'm saying. I'm at home. I come home every day. I'm there for you, but I'm not with you. I'm in the house, but I'm rarely with you. Okay? My emotional life as an adolescent and a child is short-circuited because my parent does not involve him or herself more in my emotional growth, in my emotional life.
Mm-hmm. Now, right there, I want to put a pause there. I want to stop there because we're running out of time, but I want to start there. I'm making a note here, adolescent period, for us to start there on our part two. Probably do a part three of this, but a part two at least. And we already have it scheduled for 2 weeks from now on the 9th, I believe, of June. Or no, it might be the 2nd. No, the 9th of June. Yes. Okay, so we're going to start there. And I made a note because we got a lot of talk about how this affects the adolescent life, the adult life, and different scenarios. I want to look at what Barbara might have gone through and how her adolescence might have been, or her childhood might have been a little different, and how she saw conflict a little bit. Because women see things different from boys. You know, it's a little different situation, how they perceive things, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that different dynamic also. So with that in mind, we got to put a close down for the show, but I want to repeat your your information. You said you're at Ebony House. And can you repeat one time what you do at Ebony House again so everybody gets a good grasp of what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm the clinical director. My responsibilities are to oversee the clinical treatment that's given to the clients in the substance abuse program and particularly the comprehensive children's program to make sure that we can continue to deliver the quality of services that we deliver. I also assess the young people that are brought in by their parents. Their parents come in. We have staff that in detail get information about problems and conflicts and dilemmas and difficulties that they are having, their children are having, and it's my responsibility to take this information, look at it, and based upon scientific research and based upon my training and experience in collaboration with others, to come up with a diagnosis of what really the nature of this problem is, what's going on. And in turn, what we do is we develop treatment plans for the children and their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what? That is coming in the door with a problem or issue, the storm, right?
Yes.
And the cleanup occurs when they come in the office and see us.
Well, all right. All right, we'll stop right there, but I want to thank Dr. E. Douglas Brown for joining us on the Reconnected Show today to enlighten and making us aware of certain elements that a lot of us probably have gone through in our own lives. And so thus we can see how maybe we had the kind of life we did have and how we had the challenges we did have. And so this is very good for us. So we're going to continue in tubes with this. So we're in now, so... Thank you, Dr. Douglas Brown, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Remember, all right, sir. Yes.
Remember that resolution is as important as the emotional life. It's critical emotional.
Yes, everybody got that for sure. Very, very important. So we'll see everybody next week for a tape of validation. Now, Dr. Brown will lead the speech for now. Thank you again. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you. Yeah.